Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. Today's show is a repeat of a show we did in 2008 when the Olympic Games were taking place in Beijing, China. The aims and aspirations of what the Games represent to all athletes is a constant reminder of what really is important in life and how it translates into any language and culture. Gil Shaham performs the Butterfly Lovers Violin Concerto, which reinforces the message of unity through art, sports, and man's striving for the heights. History will be made this week when the Olympic Games opened in Beijing, China. History was also made in 1959 by the composers of a work which is highlighted this week on Crossover. The Butterfly Lovers Concerto was reviled and suppressed when it was premiered, and the composers and artists were imprisoned. In contrast to that period and changing times, it will be proudly performed in operatic form during the Beijing Games. The work is based on one of the most famous Chinese operas, The Story, an Ancient Chinese Legend, which is a cornerstone of Chinese culture. Our guest, violin virtuoso Gil Shaham, has recently released a recording of the work and speaks with us about his experience. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Gil.
Thank you, and you.
And thank you. And this beautiful concerto that you're doing, first of all, the timing is really quite interesting that the release has come out and you are combating the events that are going on now with the Olympic Games and so on in terms of a whole ideology. Music, of course, is separate, but this is rather an interesting timing, I would say.
It really wasn't planned. This was a recording that we made from live concerts in 2004. And I guess now the record company has been up and running since May of last year.
And, I see.
And hence the release now.
Well, of course, you got Tchaikovsky on the same release, so
that's right.
I don't know if it's such a departure, though. I think that the Butterfly Lovers Concerto is very romantic and very,
absolutely.
Very, very beautiful.
Absolutely. I think the composers were sort of brought up and taught in the great Russian tradition. And in a way, Tchaikovsky is the great-grandfather of that entire tradition.
Well, you know, and the pianists as well. I mean, I know in China there were many, many Russians who emigrated to China in the beginning, I guess around the 20s and 30s as well, of 1920 and 30. And so there is also a tradition of piano playing there that is very much based on Russian technique. But this reminds me a little bit of, you know, the Yellow River Concerto?
I do know the Yellow River Concerto, yes.
And, of course, this is kind of romantic and also traditional in a way.
Yeah, maybe I'm a violinist and I'm biased, but my preference is very much for this Butterfly Lovers Concerto.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
You know, the Yellow River was a piece, they were written around the same time, but this was a piece that was based on a cantata by Mao Zedong. It had a very political message. And by contrast, the Butterfly Lovers Concerto is very much apolitical. It went back to the Chinese tradition and ancient folk music tradition, you know, a lot of old melodies. And the legend that the program of the piece is a 2,000-year-old. You know, it's a a story that people have called the Chinese Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, it's very beautiful. It was actually, they made a film of it, didn't they, at some point, I think.
That's right. There have been several films that have been made. I think recently they have been made an animated film even.
Ah, really?
The legend of the butterfly lovers is something that's so pervasive in Chinese culture. I tried to think of equivalents in our culture. I mean, you know, maybe something like, I don't know, Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
But this is as you said, Romeo and Juliet. I mean, this has this pathos, and of course the beauty of the relationship and how ultimately the two come together in another form and fly freely in the air and so on. But it was really damned by the Communist Party, I think, wasn't it? At some point, that was banned.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, the piece was premiered in 1959. To incredible success, and it was taken by the Chinese government, to export as a source of pride. You know, that this is a Chinese culture at its finest. And then, just a few years later, the two composers were imprisoned.
Yes,
as well as the violinist who premiered the piece.
And I read something else which I had to, I kind of smiled at, but I'm sure it was no picnic for the composer. He spent 2 years in prison and then a few years under house arrest at the Shanghai Conservatory doing manual labor and self-criticism. I mean, it just is incongruous, isn't it?
Unimaginable. It's really, what's amazing to me is these stories of, you know, when this piece was banned, the story was that people would sort of listen to it in secret. You know, people would take out their violins and secretly play the Butterfly Lover's Violin Concerto, or they would take out the recording and secretly listen to it. And very hard for me to understand that somebody would risk being in prison because they feel so passionately about the piece.
Well, it's the culture. I mean, it embodies, I guess, the whole Chinese culture. I mean, from thousands of years ago, the whole concept of I think it's Confucianism, isn't it? Isn't that the tale kind of based on, well, the role of the woman being, you know, she wasn't allowed to go to school because she was a woman. And
That's right. Exactly.
Like Yentl.
Yeah. it is. Well, very much. I mean, the story is sort of an eternal story about the human spirit. And it's incredible the love that has followed this piece since it was composed in 1959. It was later allowed by the government, and I like to think it was because of, you know, maybe popular demand. It was one of only two works that were allowed, and later, of course, all symphonic music was allowed again.
But it is a combination, though, isn't it, Gil, of kind of Western and Chinese pentatonic, you know, scale and all of that. It's very, very, it's a combination of both.
Very much so. I think the idea was to sort of do, maybe somehow the way Grieg or Dvorak or Tchaikovsky took traditional folk material and then translated into symphonic form. And I think this was the idea here also, to take, traditional Chinese melodies and musical language, as you say, pentatonic, kind of open fifth, open fourth chords, and make it into a symphonic language. It really is a translation from a Chinese opera. It's sort of like a musical translation of one of those, you know, those incredibly elaborate Chinese operas.
I think they said it at one point, it was the most, well, if this was in China, the most performed violin concerto of all time.
This is the thing that amazes me with this work, is the love that the audience feels for it. The story that I heard was the most often performed symphonic work, period.
Really?
No. Yeah, but I think mostly, of course, in the Chinese-speaking world. People love this. I remember when, after I finally learned it, I had a couple of trips to Hong Kong and to China, and I was just amazed. I'd be jet-lagged, and I'd go in the mornings to the park and, sort of jog before breakfast, and there'd always be groups of people doing Tai Chi.
Yes.
And inevitably somebody would be listening to the Butterfly Lover's Violin Concerto.
The story, which traces back to the Jin Dynasty, feudal times, concerns Zhu Yingtai, the young daughter of a rich landlord, who, forbidden to study the classics because of her gender, dresses as a boy to attend school. There she meets Liang Shanbo, a fellow student, and their attraction grows. After discovering that she's a woman, he pledges his love, but the girl's parents have arranged her marriage to a wealthy man, and Liang dies in grief. On her wedding day, Zhu has the procession pass Liang's tomb, which opens at her arrival. Zhu throws herself inside, and soon the two reemerge as butterflies fluttering freely into the air. Hear now the Butterfly Lover's Concerto for Violin by Cheng Gang and Ho Zhan Hao. Gil Shaham is violin soloist with the Singapore Symphony Orchestra, Lan Shui conducting. We've just heard the Butterfly Lover's Concerto for Violin and Orchestra, Gil Shaham violinist performing with the Singapore Symphony Orchestra, Lan Shui conducting. This is from a new release on the Canary Classics label, which is paired with the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto. It's very beautiful. I mean, it's not just an oddity. There's, again, it's a melding of these, of the Western and the Eastern, very much. And of course, I think it's very violinistic, isn't it? I mean, the sound that you get is really quite beautiful.
I think so. I think it's really the hats off to the composers, because I think they wrote with incredible sensitivity and also incredible sincerity, and it comes through.
Now, was the composer a violinist?
Right, there were two composers. Cheng Gang and He Zhan Hao, and I think that He Zhan Hao was a violinist who composed, in addition to this work, many, many other works of the same form, sort of a Chinese folk music for violin. And this was very fascinating for me to learn. Chinese the violin playing is very different in style and in sound and in technique from, the technique that that I grew up with. The violin has been in China for over 150 years. And I guess in many ways, Chinese folk violinists play with a style that's similar to erhu players. The erhu is the Chinese two-stringed instrument where, there's no fingerboard, so somehow your fingers slide. On the string, there's less friction than on a violin with a fingerboard. And also the erhu has the bow between the two strings, so you can't lift it as you would on the violin. There's very different motions. Somehow the erhu always keep the bow, players always keep the bow moving, and they find different ways to stop it and different kind of patterns.
But it's so held differently, isn't it? Don't they hold it in a different position?
Yeah, that's right. The erhu is actually played almost like a cello.
Yes, on the knee or something, yeah. I had seen pictures of that. And again, of course, the scale, I guess the sliding pitch is kind of like the Indian scale. I mean, you have semitones and so on. Is that the way it's done in the Chinese music?
Yeah, and then in this particular piece, there's a lot of parts in the music where the composers sort of devise their own notation. They write the particular slide, the particular kind of pitch bend that they want.
They indicate that.
They indicated if you opened up the score, you'd see all these kind of markings above notes that indicate especially these kind of weeping tones. You know, I guess they chose the violin for a reason, and the story has a lot of
crying,
weeping, weeping and grief, and that's hence the violin.
Well, people have to cry. I must say that a friend of mine who lives in Asia said that they love drama and they love soap operas and they love sad stories. You know, the general public likes that a lot. And I guess maybe that's all over the world. People want to cry and then feel happy that the good will triumph or something like that. Because this, of course, is that kind of a story. It's the souls of these two are embodied in the butterflies, and they fly freely together in the air. But there is something much more powerful about this concerto. And as you say, it does move one, even if one is not Chinese. But I would imagine that it has a lot of power musically, politically as well. I mean, I think that as you say, people risk their lives to listen to the music. And that's quite a statement.
Just wild. I mean, just unimaginable to me. You know, when I was over there, I guess in Chinese they abbreviate the name of the piece. They call it Liang Zhu. So I always joked around. I said, I'm a young Jew. I'm a middle-aged Jew. I'm trying to play Liang.
But
it was fascinating to learn,
Well, you had to actually learn how to play the violin a little differently then.
I did, it was amazing to discover. And I took some lessons from Chinese violinists.
Mm-hmm.
Who showed me a lot, and I also had some conversations with arhu players, and it was fascinating to learn about this piece.
So, when they teach music in the conservatories there, I mean, what actually are they teaching? Western music as well?
I think almost exclusively it's Western music. Although I think it's true that the conservatories also have traditional Chinese music departments as well.
So, would you say that they're the traditional Chinese music and performance on those instruments is kind of rare now? I mean, has the country become westernized in that way?
I don't think it's rare. I think there's quite a lot of it. I really wouldn't know, but I think that it is somehow treated separately. You know, almost like, well, this is Chinese traditional music, and this is kind of Western. People call it Chinese classical music and Western classical music. You know, almost like they're two separate fields.
Now, you recorded this in Singapore, was that right?
That's right, in mm-hmm. Singapore.
With the Singapore Symphony. Yeah. And how are they? I mean, how are the symphony musicians in terms of, is it all the same? You know, music is a universal language, but of course there are differences and of expression. But how did it feel? I mean, did it feel like you were at home?
It was amazing. I especially love working with Maestro Lan Shui. I'd played the piece with him in Taipei a couple of years before, and we were actually recording live concerts. So this was part of the Singapore Symphony's series where we played the Butterfly Lover's Concerto and the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, and we thought maybe we should release the recordings.
It's a good idea.
You know, I love it in Singapore. It's where my wife was born, and her family is from there, and of course there's a big Chinese a lot of Chinese culture there, a big Chinese population, and the Butterfly Lovers is very famous and very often played. It's really almost like an anthem. You know, I think the orchestra say they play it 4 or 5 times every year.
I guess when you start playing, I suppose people applaud.
Everybody knows the melody.
Yeah,
everybody plays.
They sing.
It's wild to think of a violin concerto that's become so pervasive throughout a culture. I really can't think of any equivalent classical work in any other country that's reached this kind of amount of love from the audience.
You think it could be a good diplomatic tool under the circumstances?
You know, I think music does have a way of communicating, as a way of bringing people closer. I think there's something about the experience of sharing music that's that's very intimate. You know, there's something about when you listen to a piece of music with someone else, or when you play a piece of music with somebody else, you're literally breathing together for 30 minutes or whatever it is. And I like to think that music does have a way of breaking down barriers and making people feel closer to each other.
Well, maybe this would be one of the steps forward, I guess, in these days of discontent. Gil, thank you so much. It's wonderful speaking with you. A beautiful, beautiful release, and the very best. Hope that that we can speak again on another new release coming down the pike.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much, Jill. It's nice to speak to you again.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Also on this recording is the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto in D Major. Here is the finale, performed by Gil Shaham with the Singapore Symphony Orchestra, Lan Shui conducting. We just heard the final movement of Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto in D Major for violin and orchestra. Gil Shaham, our guest today, was violin soloist with the Singapore Symphony Orchestra, Lan Shui conducting. That's it for this week. Until next time, I'm Jill Pasternak.
For a second listen to selected crossover interviews, visit www.wrti.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Hattie, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group Incorporated. Thanks for listening.